The following is a Sunday feast lecture on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 8, text number 5, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasathikari, recorded on August 12th, 2012, in Austin, Texas, USA.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Antakale chamam eva smaran muktva kalevaram ya prayati samadbhavam yati nashyatra sanshayah antakale chamam eva smaran muktva kalevaram ya prayati samadbhavam yati nashyatra sanshayah.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. And whoever, at the end of his life, quits his body remembering me, at once remembering me alone, that word alone is very significant, remembering me alone, at once attains my nature, of this there is no doubt. Purport, in this verse, the importance of Krishna consciousness is stressed. Anyone who quits his body in Krishna consciousness is at once transferred to the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord is the purest of the pure. Therefore, anyone who is constantly Krishna conscious is also the purest of the pure. The word smaran, remembering, is important. Remembrance of Krishna is not possible for the impure soul who has not practiced Krishna consciousness in devotional service. Therefore, one should practice Krishna consciousness from the very beginning of life. If one wants to achieve success at the end of his life, the process of remembering Krishna is essential. Therefore, one should constantly, incessantly chant the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Lord Chaitanya has advised that one be as tolerant as a tree, Tarar Iva Sahishnuna. There may be so many impediments for a person who is chanting Hare Krishna. Nonetheless, tolerating all these impediments, one should continue to chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, so that at the end of one's life, one can have the full benefit of Krishna consciousness. Pandeham Sri Guru Sri Jatapata Kamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavam Shcha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatan Vitantam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Bhadijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Ladita Shivishakan Vitam Shcha. However, at the end of his life, so one could argue, but we're eternal. There's no such thing as the end of our life because we're eternal. So how Krishna, is Krishna making a mistake here? And he says at the end of his life? No, he's talking about your material body, not you, the soul. (Clears throat) You are immortal. That's a thing. But your body is mortal. That's a thing. Now, the scientists are promising, just give us a few more billions and trillions of dollars for our lake homes, our yachts, our mansions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and then we will make you eternal. But the fact is, they'll never be able to make the body eternal. You don't need modern-day science for immortality, because they'll never achieve it. But if you become Krishna conscious, then you become immortal. In other words, one who is not Krishna conscious, according to his mentality at the time of his death, which is described in the next verse in this chapter, whatever state of being you quit, you have in your consciousness, when you quit your body, that state you will attain without fail. So if you're thinking of some material type of sense gratification, and then you will get a body suitable for that, you see. So whatever you cherish within your consciousness as the most enjoyable thing throughout your life, that is what you will meditate on naturally at the time of death. Therefore, if one actually wants to achieve his immortal spiritual body, it is recommended that you should always chant Hare Krishna. And that also means, you know, engaging in devotional service. That's also not different from chanting Hare Krishna. So, by this absorption in Krishna consciousness, one will be qualified at the time of death to achieve his immortal transcendental body in the spiritual world. The point is that you have to learn to relish within your heart Krishna consciousness as the only really enjoyable thing. That's quite a stretch for us Kali Yugaites. It's a big stretch for those of us who are living right now in the Kali Yuga. We're so much engrossed in material sense gratification. Krishna consciousness is so subtle. There's nothing more subtle than Krishna consciousness. It's more subtle than the mind. It's more subtle than the intelligence. So to find happiness in something so subtle is not easy, unless you're in the association of those who are already tasting it. And you open your hearts up to their how they describe it. And you open your heart up to try to understand what they are experiencing. You see? So in this way, if we take advantage of the association of devotees, which has a leveraging effect on the consciousness. If you've studied the leveraging effect in physics, you see, even when you try to jack up your car, who can just take the car and go shh and pick up the car, you see? But through the leveraging effect of a jack, you have a leveraging effect. Then you can gradually lift your car up. So that we have to use the leveraging effect, which is the sadhu sangha, you see. Sadhu sangha has a leveraging effect, and they're talking about a big lever, you see. If you have a big enough lever, you could lift up the whole earth planet. You see. So, to become Krishna conscious is actually a more Herculean task than lifting the whole earth planet. But if you take shelter of the association of devotees, then you get an unlimited leveraging effect to elevate your consciousness beyond this material existence. So those who are intelligent, they learn how to take advantage of this sadhu sangha, association of devotees. And it's very nicely described by Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He says, sadhu sangha, sarva siddhi hoi. Sadhu sangha, lava matra.
Sarva siddhi hoi.
Sadhu sangha, lava matras.
Sadhu sangha,
What does how does it begin?
Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Shastre Koi.
Sarva Shastre Koi, that's right. Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Hoi. Sarva Shastre Koi means it's described in all the scriptures. And Sarva Siddhi Hoi means one achieves all perfection. By even Lava Matra, 1/11th of a second of association with devotees. So, they're saying, well, I associate with the devotees for 1/11th of a second. Why am I still bewildered by material desires? How could this verse be true? I mean, I've spent so much time associating with devotees, but yet my mind is still tortured by so many material desires. How can this verse be true? Well, it depends on the quality of your association. How much you're really entering into that association, you see. Are you just skimming the surface of the ocean of Sadhu Sangha, or are you diving deep into that ocean of Sadhu Sangha? You see. We are meant to be deep sea divers going for the pearl in the bottom of the ocean, you see. That's why meditation, the art of transcendental meditation, is so important. Transcendental meditation means to fix your mind on Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Every day, practice it at least 16 times around the beads. This is the art of transcendental meditation, real transcendental meditation. Of course, there's that other so-called transcendental meditation where you have to pay money and get a mantra. I know I signed up for it. I had to pay 1 month's rent. Can you imagine? To get my mantra. I was a young student, actually. I was a dropout at the time, songwriter. I just dropped out of the university here, living by the campus. And I had to pay 1 month's rent, can you imagine, for this mantra that's supposed to enlighten me. I drove all the way down to Houston, and the representative of the guru, he was at the motel. Everybody took their turn going to the motel room. You brought your flowers and fruits for the guru and to offer the picture of the guru, and then you got your mantra. And so I had to keep it really secret, you know, because they're charging money. It's a money-making business, so you have to keep it secret. If it's widely known, then everyone's sworn to secrecy, you see, because how they make the money, it's a secret thing. You have to pay to get it. The only way you can get it because it's secret, top secret. And so they gave me the mantra. Aing, 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 aing. Actually, it's part of our Gayatri mantra. Like we say, Aing Gurave Namaha. There in our Gayatri, those who have Brahman initiation, you know, Aing Gurave Namaha. It's part of our Gayatri mantra. Aing, 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 aing. So I was chanting, aing, 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 aing. I mean, when am I going to lift off? You know, this is supposed to be transcendental meditation. It's supposed to empower me to transcend this material existence, to transcend all the miseries of material existence. So, okay, I'm on the runway, you know. I've rubbed up my engines, I'm going down that runway, aing, 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 aing. When am I going to lift off, you know? Is this going to be an endless runway? I'm never going to lift off, you know? And I never really lifted off. I just kept eyeing. It's like being in an airplane and the thing never lifts off. He said, what kind of airplane is this? It doesn't even lift off, you know. This is like pre-Orville and Wilbur, you know. They had the first airplane that flew, you know. Orville and Wilbur, right? Of course, in modern history, actually, it was a long time ago done in India, but they won't give credit to the Indians. But in modern history, it was Orville and Wilbur out there somewhere in North Carolina or somewhere. Kitty Hawk, I think it was called. They lifted off in some cornfield or something. They flew over the corn. Everyone applauded, you know. I don't know how long the flight lasted. But this aing, 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 it didn't even lift me off as much as Orville and Wilbur got lifted off, you see. Aing, 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 aing. And they call it transcendental meditation. Where's the transcendence? You see? Of course, the guru became a multi-millionaire. He has a big headquarters in Switzerland. He's now gone, but he actually recognized. It's interesting that it's a whole pastime how in Rishikesh when Prabhupada was there, and he was also there. And his lead students, the ones who were teachers, they were coming to hear Prabhupada. Prabhupada was very sick, but he was preaching. And then some note, some message came from this guru that take good care of your health. So anyway, this process of chanting Hare Krishna is indeed transcendental meditation. If one will focus one's consciousness, concentratedly focus. You see, very like a laser focus, intensified concentration, you see. Then, on a daily basis, with the chanting beads, you will feel a tremendous upliftment of consciousness. If you actually focus on the name, you will experience an amazing upliftment of consciousness. I remember I had that experience the first time I chanted. I was a young countercultural songwriter there in the Bay Area back in 1969. And when Hare Krishna devotee Makanlal Das Brahmachari, he said, he invited me, come with me over to San Francisco. We're going to spend the night at the temple there. So I went. I spent the night at the original temple, the second temple of ISKCON, 518 Frederick Street, a very historic temple. Very, very historic temple if you read the pastimes of Prabhupada. So I spent the night there. We slept in the basement, and in the temple room they had a little peg on the wall with a japa bead, a guest japa beads. So I chanted on the beads, and then I went back to my singing, songwriting turf in Berkeley on the campus. But on the way back, I was just amazed. There was this amazing, exhilarated feeling I had by chanting Hare Krishna. Like, wow, this is really amazing. I was really feeling ecstatic. I really felt uplifted. I felt some tremendous... I was high on the mantra. I actually got high chanting Hare Krishna. I was feeling really, really good. And that night, I was writing songs constantly in those days. There were about 300 of them. And for that night, I was visiting some people there in Berkeley, and sitting there in their living room, they turn on the television, watch one of those stupid, you know, boob tube shows, and I was thinking, this is nonsense. This is complete nonsense. And I went on the front porch and I wrote a song, because I just experienced this tremendous upliftment by chanting Hare Krishna. And I really felt that I was on the verge of achieving some what I was looking for in spiritual life. I felt, after that experience of the temple, I really felt, I didn't quite know what it was yet, but I knew that I was getting there. So I wrote this song, "Do you think I'd waste my time playing around in misery when I'm so close to nirvana?" That was my reaction to the TV. Everybody sitting there watching television. You see, why should I waste my time with some senseless garbage, you know, on the television set, when I can actually feel how spiritual enlightenment is coming soon for me? You see, so this was the great power of chanting Hare Krishna. It wasn't instant. It took a while, but you know, because I had so many. So much dirt in the heart, Mayavadi philosophy, I am God. There was so much dirt in the heart, so it took some time. But I knew I could really feel something is coming. I don't want to waste my time anymore playing around in misery. Time is time to get really serious about spiritual enlightenment. You see, that was my realization. So, we should all realize how precious this human form is. Very, very precious thing. Extremely precious thing. We've gotten this human lifetime at this human birth after millions and millions of lifetimes in the cycle of birth and death. And we're talking millions and billions and trillions of lifetimes. We've been rotating in the cycle of birth and death since time immemorial, Prabhupada says. That means you can't trace it out. There's no trace, materially tracing out when you began your repetition of birth and death. But if one can very sincerely take to this pathway of Krishna consciousness, associating with devotees, hearing from the scriptures, hearing from the devotees, hearing from the guru, if one can very seriously take this up, you're going to feel some tremendous difference in your life. It may not happen immediately. It didn't happen immediately for me. I got a little sneak preview that day, but it was another about 2 years later before I actually fully realized that Prabhupada was my spiritual master and I had to surrender to him. It took 2 years after that. So it doesn't happen immediately for everyone. You see. But if you will chant Hare Krishna and you read these books, then you'll take Vishadam, you see. You're planting the seed in your heart which will one day fructify into spiritual awakening. Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. That living entity who is wandering throughout the universe through the countless species of the countless births and deaths in the 8,400,000 species. If he is indeed fortunate, he will get the seed of bhakti planted in his heart by the mercy of Guru and Krishna. Kona Bhagyavan Jeev. Bhagyavan means fortunate. Jeev means living entity. So one living entity, Konya Bhagyavan Jeev, who is very, very fortunate, he will get that seed of bhakti planted in the heart. So, you've all come here. You're hearing now the teachings that are coming from Prabhupada, the pure, empowered teachings coming from Prabhupada. So you all have that seed of bhakti planted in your heart. Now what will you do with it? It's up to you. What will you do with that seed? Will you let it die? Or will you water that seed? If you water that seed by regularly chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, and you'll carefully weed your garden. What are the weeds? Illicit sex. That means sex for recreation instead of procreation. See, that's illicit sex. The weeds are illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling. If you will avoid these weeds, if you will get all these weeds out of the garden of your heart and you will water that seed of bhakti by chanting, the result will be gradually, 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 you'll have the most amazing awakening of pure devotional service within your heart. It's not an artificial imposition on your mind because you're already a pure devotee right now. You've simply forgotten it. You have a relationship with Krishna in his aura. For some, it's the Narayan forms, one of the Narayan forms in the spiritual world. Everybody has an eternal relationship with Lord Krishna or Lord Narayan in one of the Narayan forms in the Vaikuntha planets. Everybody has a relationship. Simply we've forgotten it, that's all. We've simply forgotten. We are suffering from amnesia. Just like I've many times given the example, I read in the newspaper one time. There was one gentleman in Dallas, Texas. Dallas is a big city. It's 200 miles north from him. Major city. And this gentleman, he was walking in his suburban neighborhood, and it's like, here's a suburban neighborhood. He was walking in a suburban neighborhood, and all of a sudden some weird chemical reaction happened in his brain, and he went into a state of amnesia. And just so happened he didn't bring his wallet with him. So he had no idea who he was. He had no idea where he lived. And he became a homeless person wandering the streets of Dallas for some time. And it took a while before they finally found him. One of his friends happened to notice him driving by. George, George, get in the car. I'll take you home. What's happened? He had a, you know, his beard was all grown out. He took an identity just to have a way to relate with people. He had to invent a name for himself. He was just living in that state as a beggar on the streets, a bum on the streets. Even though he's a wealth, you know, well-to-do middle-class, upper-middle-class Dallasite with his nice suburban home and everything, he completely lost contact with it by his amnesia, you see. So, I'm talking about us. It's a true story, but actually we're in a similar situation. We're the eternal servants of Krishna. We have wonderful identities in his pastimes in the spiritual world, but yet we've gone to this state of amnesia and we've totally forgotten about it. And we have to invent these different identities. Well, you know, I'm an American, I'm a Texan, I'm a Gujarati, you know, I'm a, what is it, Tamil? Tamale? How do you say? A Tamil? I'm this, I'm that. You know, I'm a North Carolinian, whatever it may be, you see. We do invent all these identities for ourselves. It's like that man had made an identity, invented some identity for himself just to kind of get by, you know. So, why remain in this state? Now the devotee has come. George, get in the car. I'll take you home. And see, Prabhupada has come. Like, just like the, George's friend. Prabhupada has come. What are you doing here? Suffering in this material world. Come on, get in my movement. Hop in the car. Hop in this movement. Hop in this Hare Krishna movement. I'll take you home. You see, Prabhupada will take us all home. He's got to hop into his movement and he'll take us all home, you see. So, in this way, try to understand what is this wonderful Krishna conscious movement founded in 1966 by His Divine Grace Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Pariva Jagacharya Astatarjadashi Srimad A.C. Bhakti Vedantri Dandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. And just try to understand what is this movement. See, even though we, the followers, have done everything impossible to screw up this movement by our own foolishness, like the Keystone Cops, you know. Familiar with the Keystone Cops in America? It's famous in the days of the silent movies. It was a humorous thing. You know, there would be like a whole huge crew of police would come, and the bank robbers, you know, would rob the bank, and the Keystone Cops would come in, and they're bumping into each other, you know. And when the bandit heads out, they're laughing, and ha ha ha, and all the cops are bumping into one another. The Keystone Cops are a famous part of American cinematography, the old silent movie days. So sometimes in ISKCON, I think we devotees are like the Keystone Cops, you know, it's just only by Prabhupada's grace this movement is going on. Prabhupada's mercy is there in spite of all our bumbles and fumbles, you know, that we, the ISKCON devotees, are doing, bumbling and fumbling and, you know, making fools of ourselves sometimes. But by Prabhupada's mercy, the whole thing is going on. The whole thing is going on. So if we just take advantage of this sublime process that Prabhupada has given, then Prabhupada will take us home. He'll take us home. Back to his eternal abode. Now I mean to Krishna's eternal abode. So now are there any questions? Yes, Kirtan.
Krishna says that at the time of death, you have to think of me and me only to come to me.
Mm-hmm.
So Ajamil was thinking of Narayan, but also he was actually thinking of his son. And his life was expanded.
He didn't actually go back to God at that moment. Because he was chanting the name of Narayan, he got an extension. The Yamadutas, the constables, the god of death, gave him let him go. He got an extension. He didn't get liberated at that moment, but he got an extension, and he went and cultivated Krishna consciousness in Hardwar, described in the Bhagavad Gita. Hardware is an ancient city, even described in the Bhagavatam. He went to Hardware, after then, and cultivated bhakti. Any other question? Yeah.
People saying that like they may not have time to chant 16 rounds very nicely.
Mm-hmm.
So is it better for them to chant less rounds nicely, or is it just good to maybe chant 16 not so good rounds?
It really depends on the individual. These is a general principle, it's better that everybody chants 16 rounds, but for some people it's too much of a stretch and we don't want to pressure them. It depends on the individual. Ultimately, yes, everybody should chant 16 rounds. And then, because you say, well, when I can chant really first-class rounds, then I'll up it to 16. Until then, I won't. Well, you may never get to 16. You see, someone says, well, if I don't chant this bead perfectly, I'm going to chant this mantra perfectly. They ask me, should I chant the bead again? And I say, well, if you're really going to do that, you'll be on one bead forever. You know, our present state, you'll be chanting that first bead. Well, this first bead was not perfect. I'll chant on it again until I get it perfect. While you're on that one bead, you'll chant one bead every day. And that's as far as you'll get, one bead. You see? So, if you're too much of a perfectionist, I mean, it's good to be a perfectionist, but if you use that as an excuse not to chant 16 rounds, you're not going to make spiritual advancement. The thing is, even though we're bumbling and fumbling our way through our rounds, as a general principle, everybody should be encouraged to come to 16. In the beginning, we tell people to chant whatever we give them a number like 4 or 8. And of course, I started 16 the first day. I mean, for me, there was no question of 4 rounds or 8 rounds or 12 rounds. I mean, I just chanted 16 right off the bat. I mean, why waste time, you know? Actually, somebody, I got an email. I get so many interesting things in these emails, you can imagine, from devotees all over the world. They give me their inside things that they maybe wouldn't tell everybody else. You can imagine all the interesting stories I get. But somebody had been, they wanted to chant 16 rounds. They said, oh, no, you have to wait until you're authorized to chant 16. You know, there's like different levels. And some congregational membership systems, they have the 8-round level and this and that. Well, you haven't advanced that level. You're not allowed to chant 16 yet, they were told, which is completely ridiculous. Prabhupada has given the order to chant 16 rounds again and again and again and again in his books. So, if you can't do it immediately, that's okay. We encourage you. That's great. You chanted one round. Wow! You chanted one round. Jai! You're practically a Mahatma. You did one round. Very good, you see. Now up at to 2. Double it. Wow, that's great. You doubled it to 2. Fantastic. Hari Bol, 2 rounds. You see? And then now double it again. 4. And then double it again. 8. And that's, so the point is, encourage them. Whatever level they're on, encourage them. But if someone says, I'm not going to chant 16 until I can chant them perfectly, then, you know, that's artificial. That doesn't work.
It will never be perfect because the order of the spiritual master Srila Prabhupada wants 16.
Yeah, Prabhupada told us to chant 16.
That will never be perfect.
So by serving the order of the spiritual master, that's how we become perfect. Our founder Acharya, our founder guru, Prabhupada, he's ordered us to chant 16 rounds. So if one is the true follower of Prabhupada, he will come to that standard as soon as possible. That's a bit. Any other questions? Anil?
It's a common practice in India if when someone dies and people all chant Lord's name. So what happens to the soul of the dead person? Does it elevate him to any?
And he heard the kirtan while he was dying or during during the cremation?
After the cremation.
It's too late. Because the verse says, quits his body remembering me. It doesn't say being burned in the funeral pyre. Because the soul has already left. The qualification is, at the moment that you leave your body, at that moment you have to think of Krishna and Krishna only. Some of them might think, oh, what about my beloved dog? They will take brother as a dog. They might become the puppy of their dog, you see. They're so attached to their dog, they'll take birth in the womb of their own dog as a puppy, you see. No.
Gurudev, what if we mess up at the time of death? Maybe we have some heavy fever and we're very hot and we think, oh, I wish it would be cooler and we could take birth in North Pole or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But if we've been a devotee up until then, will we get some reprieve?
Krishna can always throw in some bonus points. I remember when I took my Sanskrit exam, it was really a tough exam. I mean, Sanskrit is, it's the toughest course I think I ever took, was Sanskrit. And but I went up at the end, I remember the teacher gave me some bonus questions to help me in the final. If you answer this one, I'll give you 5 points. So I did okay in the exam, a little help from the bonus, the teacher, you know. I went up, got a little special mercy there from the professor in the middle of the final exam, you know. So Krishna can always give some special mercy to help one. That's a thing. Krishna can remember, oh, how dedicated you were, you see, to come to Bhagavatam class or to Gaudam book distribution or, you know. Krishna is not some cold, impersonal robot. He's actually a very loving, kind person. But at the same time, you have to remember, Krishna doesn't want to enforce something on you that is not what you really want. If you actually desire something in this material world, Krishna is not going to deprive you of it by forcing you back to his spiritual abode. Krishna is your loving father. If you really want something, he'll give it to you. So according to your desire, he will give you. Now, if you really desire pure devotional service, but your mind is being disturbed by different material thoughts, trying to take you away from your real desire, then Krishna can cover for that. But if you're actually thinking, no, I'd really like to have this, if your mind is really on that level, I really want to have this material pleasure, then Krishna will facilitate you. So we have to sincerely desire pure devotional service. We really have to. And starting right now. We have to sincerely desire Krishna consciousness and nothing but Krishna consciousness. We have to train ourselves to think like them. Questions, Mara?
Given the verse you were quoting from Chaitanya Charitamrita about Sadhu Sangha, what does Sadhu Sangha actually mean? Does it mean association with senior devotees, or does it mean association with devotees?
It means both. Every devotee is considered to be a sadhu. But the more they are advanced, the more benefit you get. But even a neophyte devotee, if he's purely representing the guru parampara by his preaching, then through him you get that contact. This way there may be a neophyte devotee. He's going out distributing Prabhupada's books, sincerely trying to represent Prabhupada. Just like our Bhakta Brian, you know. He's not even initiated yet. But, you know, Bill Clinton walked up to him on the street and Bhakta Brian gave him a Bhagavad Gita. Bill got like and said, wow, he was holding it up for everybody to see. There was a big crowd around him because there's a big celebrity, Bill Clinton, on the street. And so Bhakta Brian is praying, oh Krishna, please let him read it, please let him read it, please. But he was just praying intensely as Bill drove off in the limousine, you know, please let him read it. So Bhakta Brian, you know, he may be a neophyte devotee, but not even initiated yet, but yet he just see the mood of Bhakta Brian, you see. So even if someone is a young, non-initiated devotee, if they're purely trying to preach on behalf of Srila Prabhupada and their spiritual master, then that is very powerful association.
Doesn't sadhu sangha mean hearing from them?
Sadhu Sangha means everything, hearing from them, revealing your heart to them, bowing down at their feet, serving them personally, feeding them, clothing them, doing their laundry, so many things. Relishing their kirtan, just like I think of my Sadhu Sangha I got with Vishnu Janaswami. I mean, that Sadhu Sangha I got with Vishnu Janaswami, I got benefit by all the devotees' association. But he was a very special, empowered devotee. I got Sadhu Sangha from so many. But, of course, it was also my own being ready. But somehow or other, there are certain devotees who, you know, they're more advanced, more empowered, and we get more benefit from them. That could also be our own being open and ready also. But it's not all the same. A more advanced devotee is, the more one is advanced in Krishna consciousness, the more he is empowered to plant the seed of bhakti within the heart of a living being. So we should all strive for that. Each one of us who wants to serve Prabhupada's mission, we should strive for pure bhakti. It's like I always say, revolutionize your heart and revolutionize the world. Because only to the extent that you purify your heart do you have the potency to help others become purified. So the fact is, the more that one is advanced, the more that his association or her association is beneficial. I mean, Prabhupada's association was just absolutely phenomenal. What he was able to do just by, you know, sitting there on 26th Second Avenue and leading some kirtans and giving some classes. It's just amazing how he could launch an international movement just sitting there, a little tiny, you ever seen 26th Second Avenue? A little tiny dinky storefront. I mean, this room is much bigger. And that was it was like maybe half as big as this room. Split it down the middle, maybe a little bit longer. And that was 26 Second. That is still there. We have it still. 26 Second Avenue was sitting in that little storefront with a bunch of hippies who had just come off of LSD. He launched an international movement. Now that is real Sadhu Sangha, you see. What kind of empowerment did he have? Krishna Shakti Vina Tare Ntarep, Krishna Shakti Vina Nahi Tara Pravartana. Unless one has Krishna Shakti, he cannot spread this movement all over the world. So, of course, every devotee who's preaching sincerely has some degree of Krishna Shakti. But anyone who's able to preach, distribute books, you know, attract people to hear about Krishna, they all have Krishna Shakti. But Prabhupada had unlimited Krishna Shakti. So the point is, the more the devotee possesses Krishna Shakti, there's more benefit to his association. And nobody's being held back. Every devotee has access to unlimited Krishna Shakti. It's simply a matter, as Krishna says, Ye yata mang prapadyante tang tataiva bhajamyaham. Inasmuch as they surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. And getting Krishna Shakti is one of the rewards of surrendering to Krishna. You get the empowerment to bring others to Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Gurudev, even if we're not on that high level of being empowered, if we're very sincere that, please Krishna, please save this person, please help them to read your Bhagavad Gita and get it, does that, at that moment, make us pure enough to save them if we have
It's a matter of degree. It's not a matter of don't think of it in terms of an on-off switch, you know, for the light. Think of it in terms of, you know what a rheostat is? Where it's a fader. It's not an on-off switch. It's like a fader, you know. There's different degrees of being empowered according to the degree of purity. So as one advances in Krishna consciousness, he naturally becomes more and more empowered. As soon as one sincerely tries to preach, even from the very beginning, he gets some degree of empowerment from the very beginning. From the very beginning, So you just go on trying to become pure and trying to inspire others to become pure. And then always thinking that way, day in, day out, year after year, decade after decade, even lifetime after lifetime, a devotee is willing to come back and preach to serve Lord Chaitanya's mission. Then that one becomes more and more and more empowered. It's a gradual awakening of Krishna Bhakti. Along with Krishna Bhakti, you can say as much as you have Krishna Bhakti, to that extent you have Krishna Shakti.
So it's based on sincerity, all this gradual, the VU meter lifting is based on our sincerity.
What is based?
The more sincerity, is sincerity the key?
Yes, sincerity is the key. That's right. Sincerity is the key. The more you have sincerity, you really, really want to help people become liberated from all their anxieties. That's a fact. That sincerity is your Krishna consciousness. Yeah.
Gurudev, sometimes people say things that Prabhupada didn't recommend are actually beneficial for their Krishna consciousness. Like, for instance, some people say caffeine is beneficial for, like, them chanting nicely or, like, reading nicely. It gives them mental focus. So some
people say we should take caffeine. It helps us chant better rounds, that you're saying?
Yeah, and read nicely and stuff. So, like, what to say? Because, like, even science sometimes will back that. Like, there's not really clear studies on this that say otherwise. So how do...
Well, the fact is that caffeine does pep you up. There's no doubt about it. But it does that by stimulating your adrenal gland artificially. Your adrenal gland is there for emergencies, you know. If somebody, a tiger, attacks you, then your adrenal gland kicks in and you get this huge burst of energy so you can run faster than you ever ran your whole life. You know what I mean? So if you take caffeine, what you're doing is you're stimulating your adrenal gland artificially and you're wearing it out. So it's not very smart to take caffeine and pump up yourself that way. You're just wearing out your adrenal gland. It's less intelligent. It's a foolish thing to take caffeine for being stimulated. I remember when I was a kid in college, my roommate, Kent, on the final night, he'd be drinking Coca-Cola because it had caffeine. He'd be drinking Coke the whole night to study for the finals. You know. This is not a very intelligent thing. It's better to... There's other ways you can also stimulate. You can stand up. You can take a cold shower. If you're really drowsy, jump in a cold shower. Now, they're much more powerful than a cup of coffee. You know. So, you know, there are ways to naturally wake yourself up. You know. Do something artificial like that is not very intelligent. Not very intelligent. Because you're not actually training yourself. Not training yourself how to focus your mind. You know the old saying, mind over matter? It's actually a thing. You're just trying to play, you're trying to play around with matter, trying to get your mind to work better by playing around with matter. But the real thing is you have to use your mind to conquer over matter. That's the real way to be successful. Not I'll take, do something. Like some people also say, well, you know, I chant better rounds on LSD. Someone may say that too, you know. Well, when I chant, I take LSD and I chant Hare Krishna. I have visions of Krishna. Premanjana charita bhakti valochanena. There he is. I achieved the perfection. I chanted my japa. I had two tabs of acid and wow, there he was. I saw Krishna, you know. So, you know, this is artificial. It's artificial. You didn't see Krishna, you just, it's your own mental concoction. So. Prabhupada told us, do you think LSD, he told them, see what the original devotees, they're all, we were all LSD takers. You know. Prabhupada said, on 22nd Avenue, he said, do you think LSD is a very nice thing? They didn't answer, I don't think. They were probably thinking, oh yes. Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness is like a whole room full of LSD. Just imagine a whole, Krishna would kill you and take a whole room full of LSD and put it in your belly, it'd kill you. But Prabhupada used as an example, it's like a whole room full of LSD. So yeah, we don't need these artificial stimulants, caffeine. Just learn how to conquer the material nature by the power of focusing in the mind on Krishna. That is real yoga, not this so-called caffeine yoga. Is it? Any other questions?
So Gurudev, you were saying that this is like a very, you know, gradual process.
Yeah.
It might take even like lifetimes sometimes.
It could, yeah.
So in order to, you know, be engaged in the process, you have to purify your senses,
mm-hmm.
right? Meaning that you don't engage in the lower taste. But, you know, the person demands, you know, some sort of a taste. So if the higher taste is not available...
No, the higher taste is there. You can get it immediately. Krishna did get that. Just like I got that sneak preview. I was still a crazy Berkeley singer-songwriter, you know, at the time. But I got that taste. It was 2 years later before I actually took it very seriously. But Krishna sometimes gives that sneak preview, you see. Now, I got that amazing taste by chanting that my first round of japa. It was really amazing. And I knew something was coming. It was a foreboding. Is that the right word? I think foreboding means inauspicious, doesn't it? Who's expert in English? Foreboding means negative? Negative thing. So it was in a positive way. It was an omen, auspicious omen. That experience I had by chanting one round of japa was an auspicious omen that something amazing was coming. So Krishna does give a taste in the beginning. He gives that sneak preview, or they call it a trailer. We used to call it sneak previews, now they call it trailers. Krishna gives you a trailer. You don't get the whole movie in the beginning, but he gives you a trailer to stimulate you to go for the whole movie, you see.
Yeah, Gurudev. So sometimes it seems like, you know, like you don't have, you know, enough, a person doesn't have enough of that higher taste in order to continue in that purification process. Like it's just...
And you're lacking, and one may be lacking it, right. And he's not encouraged to continue. That's the time to get down on your knees and pray. Krishna, I know this is what I need to do to become liberated, but I don't, my dear Lord, I don't have any taste. Please help me, Krishna. Ha ha Prabhu Nityananda Premananda Sukhi Kiva Balokana Bara Amavadi Duki. Narottam Das is saying, you see. My dear Lord Nityananda, I see you're always radiating an unlimited spiritual bliss, but I'm really a miserable, depressed fellow. Please cast your glance of mercy upon me so I can also get a taste of this bliss, you see. So if you're having that difficulty, Bhakti Alexander, you're not getting any taste. You're not tasting any ananda. You're wondering, why? How can I keep going? I'm not getting any taste. And then you have to beg Lord Nityananda. Nityananda means eternal bliss. You have to beg, my dear Lord Nityananda, I know this is what I need to do, but I'm not getting any encouragement because I'm not getting any taste. Please, my Lord Nityananda, very kindly give me some taste to help me stay on this pathway. Yeah.
Prabhu, coming back to the question about sadhu sangha, is strengthening devotee relationships, you're having devotee friends and things like that, and sometimes associating with devotee friends, not necessarily on spiritual level, but say they're going through some material misery in their life, and they're devotees, and you're associating with them. Is that a form of sadhu? Is that a form of sangha?
What kind of material thing?
For example, a devotee loses their job.
Yeah.
A devotee has lost the job, and you know, she or he is going through some material crisis.
And what do you do? You help him get a job?
Help them get a job, or you just kind of help them, like, okay, let's figure out what to do.
Okay. So let's say that person is purely practicing Krishna consciousness. He's chanting 16 rounds. He's following the four rules. He's sincerely trying to awaken love of God within his heart, but he's being very much disturbed by not having a way to pay his bills. Now he lost his job, and you help him do that. Well, that is sadhu seva. That is serving a Vaishnava, and that is sadhu sangha. Even though it's mundane, you're helping him go through the, you know, get on the internet, helping him find him a job, you know, you're giving him suggestions on how to beef up, well, I shouldn't use that word, how to rev up his resume. That's also sadhusanga. You're helping a devotee. But if that person is not really Krishna conscious, he just comes to the temple, you know, he's still eating meat, he's still spending money on liquor and cigarettes and meat, and you're helping him get a job, and that's not that beneficial because you're helping him to make money that he's going to spend on sinful activities. But if he's sincerely practicing Krishna consciousness and you help him, that's very good. Serving a Vaishnava.
If somebody is sincerely practicing, would they be bewildered?
That's an interesting question. If somebody is sincerely practicing Krishna consciousness, would they be bewildered? The answer is yes and no, depending. Many sincere devotees who become bewildered. Arjuna was a very sincere devotee, but he became bewildered. So, since one can be sincere and still be struggling in Krishna consciousness, sometimes doing well, sometimes having a difficult time. But the result of sincerity is that in the due course of time, one will indeed achieve a plane beyond all bewilderment. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatmana Sochati Nakankshati Samaksraveshu Bhuteshu Madbhaktim Labhate Padam. One will, in fact, in due course, achieve a state by their sincere practice. They will achieve a state where they never become bewildered by anything. That's the Brahma Bhuta stage. So we should strive for coming to Brahma Bhuta. And that from that stage, then pure bhakti becomes easily attained. Instead of being equipoised in all circumstances. No hankering, no lamenting, being equally disposed to all living entities. Brahma-Buddha stage. Any other questions? Yeah.
Gurudev, it said that Krishna, his effulgence is more brilliant than millions of suns.
Yes.
And Srila Prabhupada has described he's like a whole room of LSD. So how can we possibly ever tolerate being in his presence? It seems like we've...
Therefore, there's a prayer in the Isha Upanishad. My dear Lord, please remove the shining rays of your effulgence so that I can behold your form of bliss. Please remove the glare of your effulgence so I can see your form of bliss. There's a prayer like that in the Isha Upanishad. Next question. Yeah.
Gurudev, so the process of Krishna consciousness and like going to the temple and all that stuff, is that happening in the spiritual world? Or like what happens to the process once you get there?
Oh, in the spiritual world, is there a Sunday love feast every Sunday? Spiritual world. Actually, the spiritual world is a Sunday love feast at every minute. Why wait till Sunday? It's going on eternally. It's the eternal Sunday love feast. Chanting, dancing, and feasting. There's no need for routine work there. You don't have to chant rounds there. You don't have to chant rounds there because you're already liberated. Are there japa beads there? I've never heard that. I've never read about japa beads even existing in the spiritual world. But certainly they could. If you want to chant japa there, you could. Because the desire tree is there, and they fulfill all desires, you can imagine. Kalpa viksha. Whatever desire you have, that tree will give you whatever you want. But the devotees don't have any material desires. They only desire to serve Krishna in different ways. That's all. Every single one of their desires is for the pleasure of Krishna. No one has any selfish desires. They have desires, but it's all in Krishna's service. Nobody has any independent desire for sense gratification. So, if you desired to go to the temple, the desire tree would manifest the temple that you could go to immediately. I'm going to go to the temple. Immediately, if there is no temple nearby, the desire tree will manifest. Oh, right, here's the temple now, you can go to. I'm going to go to a temple filled up with devotees. Whatever you want. The desire tree will give you whatever you want. But it's all in Krishna's service. The devotees have nothing except for desire from pleasing Krishna. Everything is for Krishna's pleasure. But according to their relationship, their rasa, every devotee has a desire to serve Krishna in his own unique way. There's no carbon copy. It's not like Clonesville. Every devotee has a desire to serve Krishna in a certain unique way according to his swarup, his nature. So some devotees want to be flutes, some devotees want to be peacock feathers, some devotees want to be gopis, some want to be gopas, some want to be cows, some want to be calves, some want to be the grass or rocks, or unlimited numbers of ways. Everything there is a person. Even if there's a temple and there's tiles in the temple, every tile is a jiva, a liberated soul. There are tiles in the floor. If there are marble tiles in the spiritual world, they're all jivas taking the role of a marble tile so they can get Krishna's lotus foot and the devotee's lotus feet on top of them. So it's really inconceivable what it must be like in that transcendental abode. But if you really want to know, all I can say is you have to go there. Follow the order of your spiritual master very sincerely, with all love and devotion. And I can assure you, when you leave your body, you'll wake up in Goloka Vrindavan. Any other questions?
Sometimes I've heard in some classes some senior devotees saying things like, you know, that their prayers to Krishna is that they don't want to go back because they want to come back and help. You know, they want to serve in this material.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that, is that a valid prayer? Or how does it really work in this context of this verse that Krishna says they'll come?
Yeah, it's a very nice prayer. But the actual position is the devotee is fully surrendered. My dear Lord, whatever you want to do with me is fine. If you want me to serve you in Goloka, I'm willing to do that. If you want me to serve you here, I'm willing to do that. My dear Lord, I'm completely detached. I'm just a puppet in your hands. You're the puppeteer. You pull my strings and make me dance, make me dance, make me dance in whatever way you like. And actually, a devotee can do both simultaneously as well. Do you know that? Described in the Bhagavatam that Prahlad Maharaj is simultaneously in the spiritual and the material world. So one may have a desire to be back in Krishna's pastimes, you know. One may have a desire to be out on book distribution. So you can do both at the same time. Even before leaving the body. Now that's now we're really getting esoteric, but it's described by Prabhupada that prituma, nor generally liberation. We speak of liberation as when you leave your body. He said that we follow in the footsteps of Prithu Maharaj, one can be liberated even within his present body. That means you can actually realize your sarup and be situated in your sarup and still be here serving Krishna in this world simultaneously. So the point is, the more you advance in Krishna consciousness, the more it becomes very, very interesting. And more exciting and thrilling. As you move actually up the ladder, you know, the different stages given by Rupa Goswami, you know, the first you have faith, then you associate with devotees, and then you get initiated, and then you do the house cleaning, you know, in your heart, called Dasyanartanavritti, under the guidance of your spiritual master and the Vaishnavas and the scriptures. You do a thorough house cleaning on your heart. And then you become very solidly fixed. It's called firm faith, nishtha, firm faith, where you're actually situated beyond passion and ignorance now in the mode of goodness, firmly in the mode of goodness. And then you go higher still, ruchi. Now you start to get that awakening of transcendental taste, where you actually relish Krishna's name as the sweetest flavor, inconceivably sweet flavor. You start to relish the sweetness described by Rupa Goswami in his Pajavali. Vidagdha Madhava. His description. I don't have time. We're out of time to end the class now. I'll save that for later. But I'll tell that one later when we have more time. But He gives a description of the how much taste is actually there in the name. In the Vidugda Madhava, a wonderful verse that Prabhupada told George Harrison he should make a song out of it. But it's amazing shloka in the Vidugda Madhava. And then you go even higher from Ruchi, you go to the Asakti stage where you become totally attached to Krishna. And that's the beginning of pure love of God. At that stage, you actually realize who you are in Krishna's pastimes. And you can see Krishna's leelas. You can see them within your heart going on live in full technicolor. And stereo sound, everything. And then you go even higher to the bhava stage where you have the volcanic eruptions of transcendental bliss within the heart. All kinds of transformations in the body described 8 symptoms of the bhava stage. And then finally you enter into the prema stage, pure love of God. So these stages can be achieved even within the present body. If one is very, very serious. Prabhupada actually told me, he said, if you simply engage 24 hours with full, the word sincerity again, with full sincerity of attitude, then Krishna will personally come and answer all of your questions. So if one can actually achieve that stage in this present body when Krishna comes to him and speaks to him. So such stages are available for us. Every one of us can achieve these stages. It's a matter of being very, very sincere and always staying fixed in Krishna consciousness. Does that answer your question? Okay. So, how much time do we have now? Bus? Okay. So we thank you all very much, especially our visiting devotees. Our brahmacharya is visiting them. Next Sunday they won't be here. So we're very happy that you all were here. Sankirtan Das and Bhakti Tyler and Dvijamani Gaura and Shamananda. It's very nice having some brahmacharis here. Very nice. Brahmacharis are the foundation of the Vedic culture, actually. The pillars of the Vedic culture, the brahmacharis. So, we'll stop here. We thank you all very much. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki no Raja Vijay Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.